So in this podcast, I'm going to look at mental health issues and people with special needs and how they're dealt with in today's society. I was going to kind of go from a whole big long spiel and letter that I'd wrote out, but it sounded kind of like stuck and constipated. So I figured I'd just free flow it because it sounds a wee bit better when it's like nature's free flowing farts. So I like to bring a wee bit of humour to things. I'm not a very serious person. I have been at college for 7 years, and I guess people would class me in that professional kind of area, now that I'm qualified and stuff, but I've never took myself too seriously in that way. I've always brought humour to the job that I'm in as a therapist, and a lot of my colleagues are the same way. It's the only way we survive in the job, is to bring that wee bit of humour in. Dark humour sometimes, but you know, it's how we survive. Anyway, I just wanted to talk about kind of mental illness and in today's society. And basically what that is I'm going to really go into a wee bit of background history about myself, because I think disclosing that will be a benefit to other people. Basically, when I was a kid, I had undiagnosed Asperger's. I went to school and nobody recognized what I had. Obviously, back then it wasn't as known as what it is now. And I still remember standing at the side of the playground and feeling like, you know, it was like a bunch of over hyper monkeys screaming around me, and I was hanging on to the teacher's thigh just waiting for this extremely loud bell to ring, which was also extremely uncomfortable for me with the Asperger's. But I remember every day feeling that way, feeling like I didn't fit in, feeling like I was always the strange kid, always the one that didn't really like being around too much noise or too much conversation, that was kind of small talk. And I guess people recognized that and the intern started to get bullied in that respect. At home, I didn't have a very good home life. I was living with a mum who was suffering from mental illness at the time. Another thing that was undiagnosed and still is, because you obviously have to want the help to go and get it, and a lot of people just think they're okay and keep telling themselves that. So a lot of the family that are around those people have to kind of suffer in that respect. But anyway, that's another story. But anyway, so I was in that predicament when I was a kid, and I came through that kind of very just kind of dragged through it. I came into secondary school. I'd moved school 3 times in primary school due to the bullying, which was totally horrendous. I mean, people were pretty bad. It was like several little tiny Hitlers around me, basically on a daily basis, which is what it felt like. Obviously, it wasn't. They just noticed that I was a different kind of kid, and I can see that now, but then it felt like it was just picked on, obviously, and targeted out. Went into secondary school. Same thing happened. Didn't fit in. More arguments at home, obviously, with my mum, because my mum wasn't great to be around with the mental illness that she had. My mum and dad split up. I got blamed on the divorce. I got blamed on everything else because of my mum's mental illness. My dad couldn't cope with my mum's mental illness, and he went to a special hospital for breakdowns and a mental illness ward, which was really weird because he wasn't the one that had the mental illness. But he was there for a year, and my mum had thrown me out by that stage when I was about 14, due to the fact she had extreme jealousy, bipolar, very down on herself, had a very bad back history of abuse going back way before I was born, which had caused this kind of distortion in her thought patterns. Anyway, I had to kind of cope with that, getting accused of a lot of stuff, which was pretty out there. and not something that a kid with struggling with Asperger's in the world needed to be around particularly. I was homeless for maybe 2 years, just basically living on the streets and living with friends. Still couldn't really get a grasp on why I didn't fit in. I was around crowds that were ridiculous and kind of like, you know, took advantage of my naivety a good few times, regarding my Asperger's and the fact that I was quite susceptible and gullible to other people and their intentions and their ways, because they were streetwise, of course, and I wasn't in particular. I did learn a little bit in my time in being homeless, how to kind of look after myself and kind of be a bit more aware. I guess I had no choice. Then my dad came round from his downer that he was on, and he took me in to live with him for a while, which was good because it was nice just to be somewhere that was stable for a while, that wasn't crazy. He had met someone who seemed to be relatively normal, which was a great thing because it was nice to have a role model in my life that was kind of someone I could turn to, and I wasn't going to get too much kind of craziness around it, with distortions of the kind of kind that I was used to with my mum. So I went to live with my dad and his wife. And in that time, I was still struggling with the social kind of aspect of things. I never really got people around me. I guess I was never really into the things they were into. They were into kind of celebrities and magazines and going out partying and all that kind of stuff. And I did try, and I hammered myself like a little square peg into a circle violently, more times than I care to mention, man. But, you know, did nothing but bring me down and depress me that little bit more. I wasn't getting any help. No one recognized it in me. I went to a doctor and I broke down and I said, what do I do? I can't look at anybody in the eye. I can't face anybody. It's just like I'm just living in this world and I can't cope with it. The doctor, looking at me, with this cap that I was wearing pulled down over my face, which I did particularly at that stage to hide from people and their eye contact, told me that I was depressed and just needed antidepressants. Now, looking back on that, it's kind of, it bums me out, because if I had someone that came in to see me as a client, and I seen that type of behaviour straight away, I would call it. A lot of these doctors, I find, are very nonchalant. They don't really care about people in regards to actual connection. And, you know, I even get a lot of clients now that come in to see me in my professional life that feel the same way. They feel like they go into a doctor and they're very disconnected. And I understand that they're busy, but I kind of get a little bit annoyed when they are prescribing these drugs for people that don't seem always necessary. They kind of seem like they're pushing things onto people that could maybe get by holistically or other ways with counseling. But, you know, it's I just think doctors need to maybe do a wee bit more training in regards to mental health, but that's just my opinion. Anyway, so I came away from that. I still had no help. I was turned away, kind of thrown into the world again with no clue what was going on. And I guess it was 19. I met a guy at my birthday party that my dad had for me. And I guess he had a bad home life and background, and we kind of clicked. And because I never really had any real connection, I guess at that time I thought, well, you know, this could be the connection that I've always wanted that I never really had. He was kind of quiet. He was bullied at school and all the rest of it. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, this is maybe cool. Maybe this person will get me. So we bonded like Tweedledee and Tweedledum. And had a wee baby. And we had a wee baby, I think, too, because of the culture I was in and my environment. And I see that a lot more now, which is great, because when you're looking back, you're kind of like, yeah, I get that now. I wish I could put this brain in that head back then, but that's impossible. So, I had this little baby who I love now, still, my son. He is absolutely awesome. And he brought so much joy and love into my life that I never ever knew before, because I never knew love without distortion. And I had been brought into this culture where people were, you know, it was kind of like everybody was having a child. And I guess it was kind of when little girls are brought into that culture, they look around them and think, yeah, this is the done thing. This is what I'm used to, especially in estate type areas. I think environment is more important than people realize. I think the environment is the most important factor in the mental health of most people and the lifestyle of most people. And I think that more needs to be done in that regard to promoting a better awareness in these little girls and in finding proper education and proper guidance in life, rather than looking for easy ways to get by and think just because the next person does something, maybe I should do that too. Anyway, I had Blake, and when Blake was 3, I started to notice that he had some difficulties with hearing, and he would not really respond to me when I had called his name. I kind of thought maybe this is some hearing issue he has, and I took him to the doctors, and the doctor said that he was okay. Might be something that will just go away in time. Anyway, it didn't go away in time, and he went into school, and he was throwing emotional type tantrums a lot. It would seem to be around putting clothes on, around certain smells, certain environments. He couldn't cope with it. Now I realise that that was stimulus due to his Asperger's. He can cope with certain stimulus and is getting better now, but at that time it was pretty bad. He didn't get any kind of help in that regard. He was in school. People had started to not really notice, because at that stage it was early primary school, so I guess he was just kind of find it hard, but there was no real bullying going on at that time. Later in primary school, around P6, he started to go through the same thing I did. People started noticing he was that little bit different, that he wasn't really into engaging in conversation, that was kind of small talk or being around too much noise, and he would run from place to place, which was a new one for me, because I hadn't done that one. That was one of Blake's own things, that he would run from place to place to get to somewhere to avoid crowds and all this kind of thing. And he's also quite eccentric and humorous, and I guess that when he does be that way, and he is that wee bit over the top in that eccentric kind of way that he is, that people notice that. And I've always found it to be endearing, and I've always found it to be funny, and every day of my life's like, there's, you know, he's always made me laugh, so, you know, but people notice these things outside of family life. So he was bullied, and people physically hit him, and people physically called him names, and I'm not talking just a few, I'm talking the whole school. You know, I would notice, I would walk in with him, and I would see the whole playground basically of children staring over at him and shouting his name, and I could feel exactly what I felt when I was his age, and it was not the nicest feeling. So I took him to a specialist, because I wanted to find out what was going on, and someone had recommended to me, I think, it was just a friend, that maybe he had something called Asperger's. Now, I had never heard of this before, even though I was rocking it for a long, long time, and I decided, right, okay, I'll go and check the site and see if there's anything in it. So I took him to this specialist, and she confirmed, after going through a few questions and a few tests with him, that she did feel he did indeed have Asperger's. This was the first time I'd obviously, as I said, heard of this. So I was like, right, okay, what does this entail? So I found out that it was all about the social side of things and about how he has certain vulnerabilities when it comes to not being able to cope with stimulus. And I was like, right, okay, this sounds a bit familiar as well, because I'm kind of that way. I'm kind of like the how Blake is. I've always been the same way as Blake. And she said that I probably had the same thing. But there's no adult diagnosis service, so there's no way of getting that diagnosis for me. Now, that wasn't really a big thing. All I wanted to do at the time was get Blake diagnosed. So I needed to get him help. He hadn't been doing very well at school, so that was the first and foremost thing in my mind, get the kid help. So I took him to get statemented and get an official diagnosis. That took a long time, and I was waiting for months and months to get his diagnosis. When I did, I was introduced to an educational psychologist by the name of Gillian Gamble, who had been taking part in his diagnosis. The woman was extremely hard to get. She was never really around. Emailing her was a nightmare. Just trying to get a hold of her while Blake was in school suffering the whole entire time was ridiculous. When we did finally get her, she would come into school meetings in the primary school. I would sit at a table with the headmaster at the time, a teacher, and her, and I would listen to them confer with each other about how they felt that Blake was okay and Blake could cope. Even though Blake was coming home every day with physical injuries, he had been pulled off chairs, he had been hit around the head with objects and had bruises and lumps on his head. Every day he came in, he was telling me he was depressed, he had even mentioned suicide, and these people were sitting around the table telling me that he was fine, that it might, you know, this Asperger's thing might just be a wee bit, you know, OTT. And in the words of the headmaster, he has similar things to Blake. So, you know, maybe it's just something silly. Just, you know, it doesn't have to be Asperger's. I mean, if he has certain similar traits to Blake, I mean, it could just be that. It could just be odd little eccentric kind of parts of his personality. I was very annoyed by this, obviously. Very frustrated by it. I sat and listened to what they had to say. The educational psychologist went into the playground with my son and watched him play. He would sit on his own a lot. She said he played okay. She'd only watched him for 5 minutes. She had not witnessed later that day when he came home with several lumps on his head after a kid had come over and smacked his head off a bench in a group of other kids. And it basically just trying to overlook everything he was going through. So that went on for nearly a year, you know. And I was in and out of the school and out of meetings trying to make them see what he was going through, even though they kept throwing this, oh, he's okay, he's totally fine kind of thing at me. He was totally not okay. The kid was suffering horrendously, couldn't cope at all. Kept hearing about funding being an issue over and over again. Made me even more angry. So I decided to take him out of school. He had left primary school. He was academically great. He was high in his marks. He was great student that way, but he wasn't applying himself because he had no one to sit in a one-to-one manner with him and help to explain certain things that he needed to do, which Blake organisation skills are definitely at that point weren't in any way what you would call good for his progress. So there was no one to help him, and he suffered greatly in that, and he didn't do his 11 plus, which he could have done in pass had he have been given the one-to-one support, which he wasn't. And he ended up in a mainstream school. The mainstream school he went to didn't have any smaller classes, didn't have any special needs support, even though I was told that they did. He went into the school. He was, I'd explained to them that he doesn't like crowds, that he might run from place to place, not to give him a hard time about it, because it's part of how things are with him. It's just him avoiding noise and crowds. Also, he doesn't like going into canteen areas because of the crowds and queuing up and stuff. And he would need help with that. And, you know, obviously he wasn't getting one-to-one support either, so he was finding it hard to apply himself in his work, even though he was, as I say, he's a smart kid. So he came home from school those days and he was vomiting and he was throwing up and he, you know, he was locking himself in his room and he was telling me he didn't want to live anymore and he was telling me he couldn't cope anymore and life wasn't worth living and that he couldn't go to that school anymore. They were shouting at him in that school for running. And they were telling him off and telling him not to do it. They were not helping him in the canteen. He wasn't getting anything to eat. He was panicking and he was leaving. So he was coming home vomiting because he had had nothing to eat all day. He had been ignored by the people that were working in the canteen, even though they were made aware of what was going on with him. He had still no one-to-one support. And he was struggling terribly, even though, as I say, academically, he was bright and he could have achieved so much by that point. He hadn't because he hadn't been allowed. Anyway, I ended up taking him out of school for a year. I lost the head and I said, I've had enough. I am now taking it into my own hands and I'm keeping him off. I am not sending him into school anymore until you get him help and get him the support he needs. At this time, I had just, a few years before that, I'd just started college. So I was also in trying to, you know, apply myself that way. I'd also started a placement in my organization. And that meant seeing so many clients to get up my R's for accreditation. So this was also kind of juggling Blake and myself, in that regard, as I was on my own with him, of course. That was because me and his dad, obviously, being so young, hadn't worked out, and that was nobody's fault, and we still are good friends, and, you know, that wasn't a negative thing, it was just one of those things. Anyway, so, in that, I kept him off for a year. I sat down and I found out all the guidelines that the special education were meant to meet for all kids with special needs. I looked at the ones they weren't meeting and I made a list of those. I compared them to the way he has been being treated and I wrote it all down. I also got in contact with the Children's Law Society and I asked them to help me to speak on his behalf at the meetings because I felt I wasn't being heard by anybody and that everybody kept mentioning funding. So, in that time also, Blake had expressed being suicidal, which worried me, obviously, greatly. And the organisation I'm actually working with now, counselling, helped him at that time. They brought him in and they worked with him, which was a great resource for him because obviously he needed someone that was going to hear him and they were able to put his voice across. I got copies from them with Blake's permission, of what he had said, and I put those forward to the education board also, to let them know the mental anguish he was going through with what he was dealing with. So I had the Children's Law Society. I had made notes of all the guidelines that weren't met, myself. I had also had counselling with Blake to have his voice heard and documentation of that. So I got all this together and I went to their next meeting because they wanted Blake back in school, which wasn't just going to be as easy as that because they needed to make some bloody changes. So that year, before he just went in, they put him in a guidance centre just to get him back into school. It was a small centre. It wasn't for kids with special needs. It was for kids with behavioural issues. Now, I'm not against kids with behavioural issues. I understand from all areas that kids suffer from different degrees of different things going on in their lives. And that's nobody's fault. And even Blake realises that because he's smart enough to tell me that. As a child, I think that's astounding. Anyway, some of these kids were very aggressive. Blake, having what he had, found it very hard to be around that again. So I found, again, he was kind of put into somewhere where he didn't belong. Like a square peg getting put into a circle hole and just getting hammered in. It just seems to be a reoccurring thing for people with Asperger's. So that lasted for a while, and then they decided, they found a school that had a special education unit, a smaller class, which was great. And we took him there, and they decided to, after everything that I'd done with the children's law solicitor came with me, and she was a brilliant girl, very down to earth, just got it. And she came with me and she supported me and she was a voice for me. And it helped me to be heard because I wasn't being heard for a long time. She was able to put what I wrote out across to them and what I thought wasn't being met and the notes from the counsellor and everything else. And they put that to the education board. And I think in a way they had panicked because they realised they had let him down so much. And it was all starting to, come out, you know. Other people, I was letting other people know about it, and I don't think they liked that very much. So they got him the help he needed, finally. Now this is in third year, it's nearly the end of school. It took them a long time to get that help. And the school was awesome. With the help and the classroom assistant that they gave him, he thrived. He got grades that were straight A's. He was coming home relatively happy. He was still getting bullied as it was still mainstream. And the small classes he was in weren't specifically for special needs. They were actually for behavioural as well. So they were mixing the two in, which again to me seemed like a little bit inappropriate. Because they're two different kinds of kids. And you're kind of mixing one end of the spectrum with another. And that's probably not going to work. And it didn't. So he was coming home still being bullied. And still finding it hard to cope with people shouting around him and stuff like that. But he had support. And in that support he was coming home with straight A's. And he was coming home happy. The happy thing was more important than the straight A's, of course. Definitely. But, you know, in that time he was coming home, you know, he was still being bullied and he was still coming out the odd time saying to me, you know, Mom, this kid just came up and pulled me down in the hall for no reason, just clean off my feet. And there was nobody still, not really watching out for that or, you know, 100% the way, you know, I thought it should have been, but, you know, it was better. But then I found out that that school was going to join with another school because of funding, and it was going to turn into a huge, you know, a bigger, bigger school, which would have been probably more for Blake. Also, the smaller class was going to have more behavioural type issues coming in with other kids, And that was going to be also a big thing for Blake, because I think it would have been, you know, had a negative impact on his learning, and he had had so much to deal with already. I decided, right, okay, it's time to move or find something different. So I looked around and I thought, right, okay, I'll have to find a smaller school. And I found a smaller school, a good bit out into the country. I decided I would move out into the sticks to find a small school that he would be better suited in. And I contacted the education board and the special needs department and told them I would be moving schools with Blake to find him a better, more suitable place. Right now, they're still giving him his classroom assistant. They're still giving him help, and he is getting support to and from school, which gives him that wee bit of independence away from me. And also, it's less embarrassing for me to be, like, escorting him into school like a big sore thumb every morning, which I'm sure he's told me he's happy about that. I'm not cool, apparently, so that's okay. I think I'm cool. Anyway, right. So that's that. And he's getting that support now. And he's in that school. And he's doing really well. And he's getting straight A's. But that's third year. Now, they kept him back a year because of the year he missed. Now, they weren't going to keep him back that year, but I had to tell them that I wanted him kept back that year. They were reluctant. Again, mentioned funding. And I said it was something that they were obliged to do because he had missed a year of school and it was due to their negligence. So he was able to get that year given to him, which he needed. And now he's got that extra year and he's in this smaller school and I'm having to travel that good bit more to get to my work and my college. My college is actually relatively closer, but my work's way out. But it's worth it because it means that he gets to have support that he needs. This new school is awesome. The kids in it seem to be very supportive. He's not being bullied anymore, which is great because his whole life has been spent that way. He's still that awesome, wee, eccentric and humorous kid that I've loved and adored his whole life. And things are going well. But the reason I'm making this podcast is because I want people to be aware of the difficulties that kids face with this, Asperger's and autism, and just special needs in general, when it comes to getting support in school due to funding. It's ridiculous. These kids are, you know, not having the supports they need being put in place. A lot of the times, it's kind of like, I've seen this, that if no one stands in their corner and says what's going on, or no one has the education of what's going on and what's not being met for these kids, then they go neglected. I've seen other kids along the way that are being neglected still, that aren't getting the supports in place, that aren't getting the help they need, that are struggling the whole way through school. In fact, I heard a story about a kid that came out of a mainstream school and committed suicide because he never got the support he needed the whole way through school. And that was from a teacher in the last school Blake was at, which made me horribly sad because these kids are so lovely and they're capable of so much. They may not be the same as other kids, but they have so much potential in so many different ways. Maybe not the ways that people would see. Some are practically applied. Some are more kind of just quiet, but more academically applied. But they just have so much that people don't realize. And if they were given that opportunity, they would probably be a great part of society. And, you know, it's sad to see that go to waste. You hear so much about that kind of neglect, even in general life, that stigma around kids that are that little bit different, and people don't really take the time to understand. I just heard about a little girl over in Texas that was shot by police because she had a mental illness, and no one took the time to assess that in that moment. And even in that, it's a little girl. I didn't understand the whole concept of that. I myself have kind of done a lot of research on it. There's still no adult diagnosis in Northern Ireland. I don't know about elsewhere. I don't think there's any really elsewhere. I know Northern Ireland is definite no for adult diagnosis with Asperger's. I have never been diagnosed. I have learned coping mechanisms, and I have learned that through education and learning about psychology and basically myself, I have been able to kind of figure out ways to kind of function and accept myself and be able to be strong for what I need to be strong for, which is my son. And I have had clients come into me, and they have had what I would think would be Asperger's, and they have never been diagnosed, and they're not coping. And they're living a life where they're still in adult work life being bullied and not knowing why, and not knowing why they're not socially adapt to being around other people and not having anybody to tell them that they need to have coping mechanisms. Now, I have sat and give advice for Asperger's to clients that have no idea what Asperger's is, and it has helped them immensely. They have never had a diagnosis, and that's because there is none. Obviously, whoever's funding doesn't want to put that funding in the adults, so they want to keep it to kids. They don't want adults to jump on that bandwagon. That would mean more money for them. They would have to help more people. They don't want to do that. That would be putting more money out there. That wouldn't be a good thing for them. So these adults are suffering. They're not getting the help they need. They're becoming secluded. They're becoming not connected. They're sitting on their own. They're not looking after themselves, and there's no kind of help for them in the right ways. There's only mental health supports which aren't specific to their needs. So that would be something that I would love to see change. I've been writing a book, which I might put on here as an audio. It's not really fact. It's a fictionist book. And it's actually about the background of Ireland, mental health in Ireland. It's a story of a young girl who grows up in Ireland and goes through the oppression felt with the religious surrounding and environment, and also coming from poverty. And she is brought into a world where she has to learn to adapt, and sometimes that environment isn't easy to adapt to when it's oppressive. It also goes into a little bit about mental illness and how it was dealt with back in those days. And I don't want to give too much away about it, so I'll not go into it in total detail. But, I would hope maybe to put it up here. I'm definitely going to get it published on Amazon at some point. I'm still kind of working on the editing. And it's my first book, so I'm kind of nervous about it. But I would like to create an awareness in people of just how much people have suffered over the years with the oppression of not only mental health, but religion and being a woman and all the other kind of oppressive things that have came from society in how it's set up. And how that society might need to change so that people can progress and have better environments and be free as human beings and not be restricted in the ways that they are, which I think causes most mental health problems. Environment to me is key. I look around and see a sick environment, and I see a lot of sick people. I myself went into my job to try and help in some way, to connect with people. I can't say I always agree with what I learn, but I do go by it as a base, and I also bring a little bit of myself to my therapy to try and help people and open people up a wee bit. Thanks for listening. If anybody is listening, and I hope this helps somebody out there, or somebody hears it. I really do. because I know there's a lot of people dealing with the same thing. I hope to make future podcasts, not just with the book, but with other areas and subjects that I find to be not sitting well with me in current and modern society. Okay, that's me then. I also find that generally mental health should be taught in schools in a better, more in-depth way than what it is presently. I think going back to my own childhood and dealing with someone who had mental illness, I had absolutely no awareness of what that was or what that meant. I think kids should be taught more about mental illness and the types of mental illness that are out there so that they will make connections and they will connect the dots whenever they're presented with it in their family life or their home life or whatever. I think there needs to be more psychology brought into schools, not just in counseling and relationships, but also in a learning aspect. Anyway, I might go into that in another podcast at another time. Thank you for listening, and